It's showtime.
Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Alrighty, we are off and running. Oops, better turn down the monitors there. That helps a little bit. It's a little more than a minute past the hour, minute and a half past the hour. This is the horn. We are firing on both Titanic Stream engines, according to Brother Deacon Asa. The exact quote is, "Both Titanic Stream engines firing, Captain Rib Racks. Yar." Yes. And that's good to know. So that means we're off and running, and everything's running according to plan. Plans, you know, such as they are. Headon.live is where we live. That's where you go if you'd like to jump into the chat room and be part of the merry, wacky, zany, multimedia, real-time extravaganza that takes place during the 3 hours in which this program is live. We've got it's Titanic Tuesday. Maybe people were so worn out by Moran Monday they're a little slow wandering in. But if you do sign in, you'll be met by Anatole and me and VT Blom and longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although a spacing guild master, has chosen not to fold space and is content to remain Sparky for the time being. The first thing we do every evening is thank our subscribers. Thank you very kindly to Felicia, formerly of Nebraska. Thank you. Thank you, Felicia. Thank you very much indeed. Thanks as well go out to Michael. Thank you, Michael. And thanks to Kenda out in Missouri. Thank you, Kenda. Thanks to Bill in Florida, as well as to Jamie. Thank you very kindly. And to Earl. Thank you, Earl, very, very kindly indeed. Well, much obliged indeed. Oh, no, sorry, Sparky. Sparky says, damn it, Bob, I'm in the man cave. Damn it, Bob. But there's only one of you in the room, so you didn't fold space. So, I mean, there are rules to being a spacing guild master, Sparky. It's not Vietnam, okay? But anyway, this program is live for the 22nd day of May, 2018, and thanks very kindly to all of our subscribers who knock down about a week's worth of programming every month. Thank you very much indeed. And we are running downhill toward what I hope will be some fundraising free broadcasting if we can get caught up. And, you know, last night was a goose egg, and as far as fundraising goes, and tonight's we got the regular $200 to raise because of all the high living here, you know, the Gulfstream 5 and the Shannon yacht and the Maybach and the Olympic sized kidney shaped swimming pool. All of those things, absolutely, here at the fabulous Kincaid Mansion and the magnificent Horn Studios, yes. So hopefully we'll raise $400 this evening, but I don't, you know, I didn't say much about it last night, not going to say much about it tonight. If we raise it, we raise it. If we don't, we don't. And if we don't, you know, sooner or later, there won't be a horn anymore. But I've figured out my problem. Oh, yes. And by the way, it's Titanic Tuesday. A day in which we celebrate the Titanic intellect manifested by, generally speaking, right-wingers. So named for something that happened years and years ago now on right-wing radio over in Beckley, America's fifth smallest radio market at the time, when our buddy Jim tuned in one day to hear Steve, the master of the monotone, take a call from one of his little mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing followers, who said, "Daggummit, Steve, how come it is that they is seashells in the rocks in West Virginia? I done seed some down in the coal mine one day, up there in the coal, and we ain't nowhere's near the beach. I done been to the beach, you understand, but this said not, we ain't got no beaches here." To which the master of the monotone replied, "Well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates." Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, yes. Still no word on the movement of the Titanic cold brew coffee press. No word whatsoever. But we celebrate those manifestations of right-wingers who see an iceberg and say, "Flank speed, baby!" And make for it with great abandon. And I figured out what our problem is in terms of funding the horn. Yes. It was just made plain to me a little, you know, earlier today as I was doing my prep for the program. Because there are others out there who are far more successful in raking it in hand over fist. I don't grunt enough on this program. That's what it is. I don't grunt enough. Let me give you an example.
They think you're a goldfish. Remember, Gruber said, "Thank God you're so dumb and have no memory. We're going to triple their health care prices because you're so stupid." I don't think you're stupid. I've been betting on you my whole life. I believe in you. And we got Trump elected. And we got the economy coming back, and we're kicking these traitors' asses politically, and we're not backing down ever. I want to kick these people. We're winning. I can feel the spirit rising. Can't you? The turning point was yesterday.
I'm not snorting and grunting enough. I know. You'd think something like that would be obvious to a seasoned professional broadcaster, but it never dawned on me that I wasn't grunting and snorting enough on the broadcast. And I'm not selling nearly enough Horn Nutraceuticals products either. Because, old Alex there, Alex rakes it in with his the chocolate paleo chicken bone beverage. Yeah, I know. Not enough. Just not near enough snorting and grunting, so. I'll look for that later in the program. Snorting and grunting. Because that's apparently a big one, snorting and grunting. And I do want to make clear that I don't think you're goldfish either. Okay, so. If that works for, you know, Alex Jones, maybe it'll work for us, too. Ay, 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 ay. Grunting. Snorting and grunting. Hey, thanks. Thanks very kindly to Jack in Shreveport for getting us going. Hey, thank you very kindly indeed. So that means we're down to 350. That's huge. Thank you, Jack. That's tremendous because, well, there's bills to pay. Lots of bills to pay all month long. Right now it's power and internet, and then of course there's the right you know, these things always happen with exquisite timing. The right side, the passenger side, front headlight assembly, because there are no rear headlights, the passenger side headlight assembly on the Maybach, which is not a Maybach, has to be replaced. And, you know, when I priced it at the dealership, $650. And around here and online and stuff. But I it got it down to about $400, $350, $335. Then, of course, I did the smart thing, and I contacted Sister Carol Baker, who has a lot of contacts in that regard. And she found one for $180-some and change. So get that, because the headlight, the low-beam headlight, came loose and melted the entire back, because those damn bulbs get hot, I suppose, melted the entire back of the headlight assembly, so the whole damn thing has to be replaced. And along the way, well, it's going to be beyond my install abilities. But it also happened in the same month when I have to get the inspection sticker re-upped, and I can't get the inspection sticker re-upped until... Right, so... You know, I don't think members of the multimillionaire for-profit media worry about things like that, but that's not what we're about. Just adding a snort in there to see if it does any good. Mm-hmm. Oh, the suggestions are rolling in. You could always save by downgrading to a Gulfstream Pi. Says Earther. Yes. Well, right. Earther also noting it wouldn't hurt to get hydrophobia to up your game, Bob. You can really climb to Alex Jones's level then. He's got the hydrophobia. Hey, come here, old Yeller. Old Yeller. Mm-hmm. It is, you confused me there for a minute, Lee. It's not Prayer Meeting Wednesday. It's Titanic Tuesday, doggone it. Don't do that to me. we'll be doing that periodically throughout the program to see if it makes things any better. Can it hurt? But Titanic Tuesday is special. Here in these parts. And we are, I guess the phrase is, blessed with lots of examples. There's serious stuff that I didn't get to last night that I do need to get to today. But being as how it's Titanic Tuesday, we just got to do... And seeing how guns have been a significant part of the conversation of late, what to do? And I said the other day that every time we talk about anything but guns in relation to the pandemic of firearms injuries and deaths in this country, we're just making excuses for the guns. We're trying to avoid talking about the root cause. And so it was that people have kids and grandkids. And they worry about what might happen if they were to get hold of the guns, because they've got guns too, but they can't quite bring themselves to just say, hey, I love my grandkids so much that I'm going to get rid of my guns. That's just out of the question. And so enter Robin Garlock of Warren, Ohio. I can't tell you how glad I am that this isn't a story out of West Virginia. Then again, maybe this kind of story doesn't happen in West Virginia. Robin Garlock of Warren, Ohio, was worried about children in his home getting access to his freedom protectors. In particular, his one freedom protector. Oh dear, I've done it again. Subject line, snort. Just a quick note to thank you for freaking Punky the hell completely out just now. When your loud snort boomed out of the speakers, Punky shrieked loudly and flew a series of figure eights around the room before plopping onto the love seat, scaring the fluorescent piss out of Chirps the cat. You've livened up everybody's day here tremendously. I live to serve, Scott, I do. But anyway, back in Warren, Ohio, Robin Garlock was worried about the kids finding the firearm. But instead of going out and springing for a trigger lock, easy enough, put the key on your key ring, you have to unlock, you want to go out and shoot your freedom protector, you unlock it. Yeah, but then it's no good if the ISIS Muslim MS-13 comes barreling through your door trying to turn your Warren, Ohio place of residence into a heap of smoke and rubble. Where are you going to be then? So Robin Garlock of Warren, Ohio, who has managed to exist, continuously exist on this planet for 44 years, Robin Garlock started looking around the house and saying to himself, where's one place the kids will never look for the gun? Freezer? No, they're always in the freezer because popsicles are in the freezer. Refrigerator? No, they're always going after a juice box in the refrigerator. Toilet tank? Well, that's kind of interesting, the toilet tank, but it's wet, and you never know when one of them's going to open it up to jiggle the handle and make it stop running. No, that's not going to work either. I could put under my pillow. No. Sometimes I have the bad dreams. You know, it's like Hamlet says, I could be encompassed in a nutshell and count myself a king of infinite space were it not for I had bad dreams. No, that's never going to do. Under the mattress. No, everybody knows you hide the money under the mattress. That's the first place they'd look. Damn, what can I do? I know. I'll put my freedom protector in the broiler. I'm not kidding. 44-year-old Robin Garlock of Warren, Ohio, then placed his freedom protector, his pistola, in the broiler portion of his oven. You know, the oven sits on top and the broiler's down below. And he thought, ha! Now I've solved my problem. I don't have to sell my freedom protector. I don't have to feel like some pissy little liberal. And we're all going to be safe here, because if the ISIS MS-13 tries to come barreling through the door, well, all I've got to do is run to the broiler, and I'll show them. This is, you know, when you consider thought process like this, this is how you get President Trump. This is that kind of thinking. Well, Robin Garlock, 44 years old, Robin's a guy. And Robin Garlock didn't bother to tell his girlfriend about his foolproof plan to make his home safe with guns in it for when the kids came over. He didn't tell her about the freedom protector in the broiler. And so she came along and thought, you know what? I like them little frozen jalapeno poppers, the ones with the cheese in the middle. You know, you just pop them under the broiler for a couple of minutes, you turn them once, and they're so good with a little bit of ranch dressing. I mean, I don't know what the hell she was cooking in the broiler, but she preheated the broiler. Unbeknownst, unaware of the fact that there was a freedom protector in the broiler. And a little bit later, she heard, bang! And then she knowed it was on, because she thought the gunfire was coming from outside. Lord God, we've been waiting for it. Oh, my God, it's the ISIS MS-13. Help us, Jesus! Only all of a sudden, Robin Garlock knew what had happened. And he said, get down! Get down! There, that's a little more Ohio-y there. Get down! And Robin ran to grab the gun out of the broiler. But it were too late. 'Cause that's when the bullets in the gun began to explode. I don't think Robin Garlock is a goldfish, because goldfish can't put guns in broilers. And when the bullets exploded, Robin Garlock, 44, of Warren, Ohio, suffered considerable burns and was hit by either bullets or bullet pieces, fragments, shrapnel, something, and was seriously injured. But Warren County Police Detective Wayne Mackey, upon being contacted by the folks over to the Raw story, said, you know, it's a weird one. In 30 years, I've not had anybody shot by an appliance. But having let that risible little moment pass, Detective Mackey realized that he had a serious obligation, a civic obligation to the public that he serves and protects. And he said, listen, don't store your guns anywhere that's hot. Don't put your gun in an appliance. They make things for that, and an oven is not one of the things. The problem is, with these sorts of folks, you know, your gun humpers and the like, I think Detective Mackey probably needed to be a little more specific by saying things like, and neither is the toaster. And this is not going to work well in the microwave either. Don't hide it, don't hide it in the deep fryer neither. Yeah. Oh, wait a minute. Arthur's brought the A game this evening. Yeah, you'll understand why Arthur's getting a bell. Robin Garlock at Tanagra when the bullets rang. Oh, yeah, that's a double jingle. Robin Garlock at Warren when the bullets rang. That's our obligatory Star Trek reference for the evening. Arnold says, good for you, Arnold. Arnold says, how are the kids? Apparently the kids were not there. So, count your blessings. But, you know, from Arnold, I just get, wow. Jim says, guns, Lord, I wish I knew. We're currently residing in one of the unhappiest nations on earth, led by thieves and criminals. Eventually, all this shit trickles down. The answer is a compendium of lies, greed, and unparalleled dishonesty. That seems to cover it, Jim. Eloquently and briefly. Mm-hmm. Marty says, no trigger lock, fine. Let's go high tech. From Q Branch, non-obligatory James Bond reference, and have a signature gun. Actually, it's not that far out there. There are guns that only fire. There are guns that have biometrics, and yeah, but then you know somebody else can't pick it up and save your life when the MS-13 and the MS-13 ISIS comes barreling through your door to steal your Bible and kill your freedom. So we got that one. Please, don't be a goldfish. Don't put your freedom protectors in the broiler. Just don't. Because I believe in you. I absolutely do. What else? Yeah, there's been a lot of mention of this story through the course of the day. It's a story out of South Carolina, Stan. Oddly enough, the Publix grocery store chain entered the conversation last night. I've been in a couple of them. They're nice grocery stores, but apparently they do treat their employees like shit. But this isn't an employee relations or a labor story. This is the story of a young man named Jacob Kaczynski. Jacob Kaczynski of Charleston, South Carolina. He had graduated high school with a 4.89 grade point average from a homeschool program, which is not the same thing as actually going to school. Let's be clear about that. For all we know, Jacob Kaczynski's Christian homeschool program may have taught him that Lewis and Clark helped Davy Crockett and Colonel Travis fight off Santa Anna's army at the Alamo. Because Christian homeschool programs are not exactly known for their historical accuracy. And for all we know, Jacob Kaczynski may have learned in getting his 4.89 in the Christian homeschool program that black people came to America out of curiosity and decided to stay and be, as textbooks in Texas have described it, workers. Yes, workers. But nonetheless, let's not steal the thunder from Jacob Kaczynski, because someone else did that for him. His mama, Kara Kaczynski, was very proud of her 18-year-old son for getting a 4.89 grade point average in the Christian-based homeschool program. Because, you know, she didn't want young Jacob going to public school and learning about things like that demonic evolution or climate change or any of that deviltry. So she planned a graduation party for young Jacob, and she wanted a cake. And she decided that her homeschool graduate with a 4.89 grade point average. Not a lot of detail on who calculated that 4.89 grade point average. And so she went online to the Publix there in Charleston, South Carolina, and ordered him up a cake for his graduation party, and she wanted it to read, "Congrats, Jacob, summa cum laude." Now, magna cum laude is no slouch of an honor. Magna cum laude is with great honor. Magna, great, cum, with, laude, praise, honor. It's actually praise. But she decided that his Christian-based homeschool graduation and his 4.89 warranted the highest designation available, not some crummy little magna cum laude, but she filled in the box there when she was ordering the cake online, said, "Congrats, Jacob, summa cum laude," with highest praise. Right? I guess being a homeschool of one, Jacob couldn't be like the valedictorian or anything, because he just would have been speaking to an empty room. But the problem is, Publix, and in the past we've had cake problems. Publix, for instance, may have been aware of a problem from some years back where some parents actually got their infant taken away from him because they'd named the child Adolf Hitler, and they were white wingers, and they got a cake that said "Happy Birthday, Adolf Hitler" for their kid, and the person who was decorating the cake didn't really want to do that, and oh, look it up. I don't remember all the particulars. So, like any self-respecting company with an online cake ordering program, because God damn it, you know, you got to pay extra money if somebody's actually going to talk to a human being. And it's South Carolina, so, well, I mean, come on, it's America. So if somebody calls in and says, "I want to say summa cum laude," there are any number of potential misspells in there, starting from congrats all the way through 2018. And so there's a little box online that you fill out, and you say, "Congrats, Jacob, exclamation point, summa cum laude, class of 2018. No paren of one, class of one of 2018, just class of 2018. You'd think this would not be a problem. However, when she clicked submit, where the word C-U-M, which is, of course, Latin for with, over the years, it has, for instance, been changed to con, C-O-N, in what, Spanish and Italian, both? I'm not sure. But in Latin, in the original Latin, it was cum, C-U-M. But because I can trust this, the Horn Family Community Congregation to keep this program never very far from the gutter, we all know what those three letters mean in colloquial English. And it was colloquial English that the cake ordering program was worried about. And so it turned C-U-M into dash, dash, dash. So she redid it. The way the Washington Post described that situation in a paragraph, in Latin, cum is the preposition with, as in summa cum laude, with the highest distinction, actually laude, praise. To the little box on the Publix website, however, the word meant something else, and its strict algorithm, vigilant for naughty words, returned a message that said profane special characters not allowed. Cum, which contains no special characters, was deemed profane by the algorithm. Mm-hmm. The hard-hitting journalists at the Washington Post tried to do the same thing, and they got the same result. But Kara Kaczynski was not to be deterred, and so instead she used the special instructions for the bakery on the program. And she actually went to the trouble to explain that summa cum laude was, cum was a Latin word, not a dirty word. And even put a link in there showing that it was really a Latin word, meaning it right. And thought no more of it. Problem solved. She'd explained herself. She'd made it clear. And so the day of the big party arrived. She sent somebody to pick up the cake. They brought the cake home. They opened the box. And there it was. Congrats, Jacob. Summa dash, 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 laude, class of 2018. Kara Kaczynski, interviewed by the Washington Post, said Jacob was, in her words, absolutely humiliated. Mm-hmm. It was unbelievable. I ordered the special graduation edition cake. I can't believe I'm the first one to ever write summa cum laude on a cake. And then she had to explain why it was censored to Jacob's 70-year-old mother, who probably immediately had a case of the vapors and was in desperate need of a mint julep and some smelling salts. Jacob, it was reported, didn't eat much cake. And so then Ms. Kaczynski called Publix. Spoke to a real, live, honest-to-goodness human being, an assistant manager. And Publix, to their credit, said, "Well, we'll remake the cake." And she said, "You only graduate once." So, in an effort to keep the story from blowing up and going viral, which it since has, Publix gave her a $70 refund on the cake and a store gift card. On the other hand, following up, the journalists at the Washington Post noted that still nothing has been done, and that word remains banned inside the computer program that you use to determine what words you want on your cake. Because they think people are goldfish! Sorry. No, I'm not. Kara Kaczynski, upon further reflection, said, "Maybe I should have just gotten him his favorite mint chocolate chip ice cream instead." Lee, meanwhile, said, or reminded us that, in addition, Publix has another Publix relations. See what I did there? Problem on their hands. Because there are folks in Florida who are boycotting Publix because Publix has donated over $500,000 to a gubernatorial candidate in Florida who proudly refers to himself as a, quote, proud NRA sellout. Adam Putnam is the candidate. Adam Putnam is presently the agriculture commissioner for the state of Florida, and Adam Putnam wants to be governor of the state of Florida. And Publix has given $670,000 over the last 3 years to Adam Putnam. Lee points out, "I've never been to a Publix." I have. They're really nice stores. The one I was at in Northwest Alabama, right next to the Books a Million, well, for starters, they stocked Diet Grapeco, which I can't get up here, but wonderful Diet Grape Soda. Don't send me emails about how awful Diet Grape Soda is, or Diet Anything Soda is. Just don't. I know. Just, there's not a lot of choice in the matter. Sometimes I like something more than water. But the other thing is, they've got an on... Remember, I said Northwest Alabama. They've got an on-site sushi bar that will roll you just like you're in a real, live, honest-to-goodness sushi bar somewhere that's not Northwest Alabama, and they'll roll your damn sushi for you right there in front of you. And you know, it was pretty tasty. Lee points out the following quote. "The Times reported that in 2016, during his second term as Commissioner of Agriculture, Putnam once pulled the results of failed health inspections of seven Publix stores from the Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services website. He then eliminated the pass-fail grading system and made it so that the worst rating possible is re-inspection required. So, in other words, don't eat sushi in Florida, and probably don't eat anything prepared in a Publix in Florida. Ew. Yeah, ew. Lee pointed out, only you will be able to combine gun nuts with food porn. What sauce goes with pistol steaks? No, that's broiled pistol. And, how about a little sauce gunnaise? It's just off the top of my head. But remember, we're not goldfish. Hung Like Jesus tells me, Publix specialize in the elderly because of the specials. It's really an expensive grocery store. I don't know a lot that aren't expensive, though, but no, I get your point, Hung Like Jesus. One of these days I'm just gonna learn. So I said, don't email me about the diet soda. And Asa says, do you know how awful diet grape soda is for your health, Bob? It's worse than smoked meat of any kind. I guess that's kind of the point. Screwed, blued, and tattooed, right? Marty says, then again, the MS-13 or whatever can grab your gun away and use it on you, which is the more likely scenario. Well, don't tell the members of the National Rifle Association that. They won't believe you. And it'll just make them probably want to shoot you or something. Just got a note from Steve in New York. I meant to send this earlier, says Steve. I just remembered I didn't. I was sitting here listening to the podcast from yesterday, and specifically the Oliver North portion. As I listened to this, I had a hard time believing that he actually believed what he was saying. Whether he does or doesn't, I guess, is irrelevant because, well, the Tree of Liberty, blah, 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 natural manure, blah, blah, blah. As I sat and listened, I hearkened back to when I was in school. I went to high school in a suburb of Dayton. Admittedly, not a big town. It's a nice town, though. Our high school had something approaching 2,000 people, so the high school wasn't small. We had security guards who roamed the parking lot looking for kids leaving school. And they'd direct traffic at the end of the day, but that was about it. The notion of armed guards or metal detectors or a hardened school just never entered my mind. It was never even a part of the education landscape, and honestly, why the hell would I have wanted that? Who the hell would want that? When I hear lichen-brained people, that's L-I-C-H-E-N, well played, Steve, well played. When I hear lichen-brained people like Ollie talk, I have a hard time thinking they would want that. As I ponder their picture of schools, I see the scenes from the TV show The Handmaid's Tale, with military guards armed to the teeth in every corner watching our every move, because, make no mistake about it, that's where we're headed. In talking to any older person, I can't imagine that anyone would have wanted to grow up going to a hardened school. In what universe is that normal? And I'm gonna take a moment here to break away from what Steve wrote to say that, you know, for those of us of a certain age, we're kind of flabbergasted, gobsmacked, flibbertigibbeted. Man, I'm snorting for all I'm worth. Can anybody jump in and help Jack so we can take this 400 duck bucks down this evening? I mean, I'm really trying here. I mean, we got goldfish, we got snorting. I haven't started screaming yet, but I'm working on it. Hey, but no, I think back to my own high school experience, and, well, even as our own kids were growing up, and I realized that I was probably the beneficiary of a lot of privilege, and I pushed a lot of envelopes, and I tested a lot of boundaries. But some of it just felt like a game. You know, the high school cafeteria was a so-called closed campus, which meant that you couldn't leave campus during the day. Which meant that, and the parking lot was full of cars because more people drove cars to the school than rode buses. And the Tennessee state line, where the beer was 11 miles away. And lunch was 30 minutes long. This sets up one of those rate, time, distance, algebra word problems that they were so fond of giving us, and some of us actually began to figure them out. But it was a game. We had a vice principal by the name of Eddie Frost, who patrolled the parking lot in an old white Ford Econoline van, looking as the students tried to slip off campus, usually not to go to Tennessee to get beer, but just to slip over to Wendy's to get a burger for lunch that actually resembled, you know, meat. The hamburgers at that school were awful. Most of the food was awful. And, you know, you'd get thrown out of school for 3 days if you got caught, you know, slipping off campus, something like that. And there were a million doors to get in and out of the high school, because there were all kinds of different wings. And there was a gym door, and the shop building was entirely separate and apart from the high school. And there was a math wing, and a languages wing, and a history wing, and an English wing, and a science wing. When it was opened in 1968, it was featured in like Life magazine or something, because it was
the high school of the future.
And it was really a lovely facility. Had a performance grade auditorium. Big commons area that was whose ceiling was made of blown asbestos. Not kidding. And fantastic teachers, mostly. And I mean, yeah, you have to give kudos to any teacher who can get through a year of trying to teach little, you know, 15-year-old me three-dimensional geometry. And not just throw her hands in the air and say, fuck it, I quit. Ain't worth it. We had an art room just like they had in Santa Fe, Texas. We had a journalism department that was the envy of the entire state of Alabama, no snickering. Year in and year out, kids made national merit semifinalist and got free rides to college, and it was a pretty privileged school for a public school. 3, 4, 5 languages offered. A microscope at every desk in biology. Every kid got their own frog. And I guess now it's down to, like, you know, one or two doors or something like that. But the question arises, and I'm going to get back to Steve's note, because he's working this side of the street, too. The hell changed? I graduated from high school about 5 months into Ronald Reagan's first term. I started high school during Jimmy Carter's only term. The entirety of state government was run by a Democratic majority. There were still some people who belonged to unions back then. It was a community that was economically fueled by science and technology. that in turn had been brought in by federal government action under the FDR administration, the Tennessee Valley Authority, and its National Fertilizer Development Center. Subtitle, let's think of something we can do with nitrates and nitrites besides turn them into bombs. Because we've got a lot laying around after the Second World War. Went to school with kids from all over the country. And, you know, the high school across the way was a lot older, but it wasn't much different. The high schools in Huntsville, Alabama, right there, you know, Rocket City, not much different. Pretty good schools. And not one of them ever had a mass shooting. Closest we got were tornado drills, which we did take seriously. And the occasional smartass who would go to a payphone. Oh, Pa, what's a payphone? Never mind, kid. The smartass who would go to the payphone, call in a bomb threat, because, you know, they had a test that they knew they weren't going to pass in trig in fifth period. Generally speaking, the relationships between different ethnicities was probably better than it is now. Groups still largely kept to themselves, and then they subdivided into even more categories. But nobody carried guns to class. You know, if you were a real badass, you might carry a buck knife. But it was Alabama, so there was an argument to be made that, well, you know, maybe you needed that. Never knew when you'd have to just sit down at break time and do some power whittling. And I wish I could tell you where this changed, or when. But I can tell you this, in the ongoing effort to explain why school shootings happened, noted Klan sympathizer and recovering gunshot victim himself, Steve Scalise, member of the House of Representatives of the United States and a high-ranking Republican member of the majority, well, he was interviewed at National Airport in Washington yesterday by TMZ. And they ran up and stuck a mic in his face to find out why it was why Steve Scalise thought that we had these problems with these school shootings.
Sit on.
Oh, wait, that's not supposed to be there. Now let's try. Maybe in a second.
The things that the shooting that happened in the high school in Texas this week, you know, your thoughts to the kids that survived and, you know, people that are going through things right now?
Yeah, it's just a sad tragedy. And, you know, you see these happening with these young kids, and clearly there's something going on inside the culture. And I would hope that, that these young kids are thinking about doing something. I mean, these are their classmates, their friends. You know, maybe we need to put more faith and religion and God back in the schools to teach the kind of values so where you won't want to just go and kill your own classmates. So my prayers go out to those kids and their families.
And one of the sheriffs from that town, he also said something about, you know, I know you said something about prayer. He said we can't do it with just prayer alone right now. So he expects more to be done?
Well, you absolutely need more prayer. In fact, they've removed a lot of the prayer, and that's one of the problems. You need to bring faith back. we've had guns for decades, and yet you haven't had mass shootings for decades. So something different is going on in the culture. And I think, frankly, you can look and see one of the elements that's missing that used to be there before is a lot more faith.
Yeah, see, there's only one problem. They're still praying at football games. They're still praying in schools. Prayer was removed from the public schools in 1961, 62, something like that. It was before I was even born. And for the most part, at least where I grew up, they kind of ignored it and went on and said, well, we're going to pray. Okay, we're not going to pray. And so every day in my high school, between 1977 and 1981, we had a daily Bible reading. And that, too, became something of a funsy. Going in and reading an appropriately inspiring passage from the Quran. That happened. Or going in and making the daily Bible reading one of the, and their eyes shall rot out in their sockets as though the dogs were plucking their eardrums out of their ears, and there shall be great tribulations in the earth. And then we do the Pledge of Allegiance and get the day going. But the prayer was there all along, and they're still praying. I mean, what, is Steve Scalise convinced that Santa Fe, Texas is some sort of heathen enclave? Well, you know, I mean, you see that kid's name. He's probably not a decent Christian. He's probably one of those Greek Orthodox Christians. Not a real one. Probably didn't have a personal relationship with the Lord Jesus Christ. But that's kind of a non, you know, that anything to keep from talking about guns. So back to what Steve wrote. Steve in New York. In talking to any older person, and as an older person, that's why I editorialized, I can't imagine that anyone would have wanted to grow up going to a hardened school. In what universe is that normal? I suspect the retorts to that would be that times have changed, or it's a different world, etc. That's, of course, true somewhat. However, kids have been turning others down from time immemorial on dates. Kids have been the butt of jokes and ridicule from time immemorial. There has been mental illness. There have been violent movies. Hell, toy guns were a common thing when I was a kid. Nothing is new in this regard under the sun. So what's different? Does society seem meaner and crueler? Probably yes. Do we seem disconnected as people from each other? I think so, yes. However, and I know I am biased, but I suspect that the dehumanizing of our fellow humans and the loss of respect for life, if that's a thing, has nothing to do with a decrease in religiosity or abortion or video games or Ritalin or whatever. It seems to me it has resulted from a dehumanizing of people through the denigration of the poor, the working class, and the superhumanizing of the rich. I think it is the death penalty, the endless wars, the militarization of society that has made us all see things in an us versus them, and even good versus evil lens. In particular, I've said that right-wing religious nutballs with their beginnings in the moral majority, which would be happening along about the time that I was a high school junior and a high school senior, yep, have worked nonstop to set up this we are good and you are evil dichotomy versus the I am right and you are wrong. One can convince another whom one thinks is merely wrong to what one thinks is merely right. Going from good to evil? Not so much. So yeah, Steve says, I blame the right wing for devaluing life through the policies of demeaning and dehumanizing the poor, working class, and the other through their militaristic and violence-based policies. To return to the why regarding school shootings, as I said, kids have always been jilted. Kids have always had anxiety. Kids have always been made fun of. Hell, I was called fat, so I got the other word a lot that began with F, and I also got fatso. But yeah. Here's the real kicker. It still happens all over the world, everywhere. There are violent video games all over the world. There are violent movies all over the world. There's mental illness all over the world. There are kids teasing kids all over the world. The one thing all over the world does not have, guns, guns, and more guns. Couple the right-wing attack on non-rich folks over the past decades, and they're dehumanizing, and you get anger and deceit and rage. Add guns to that, and you get shootings, shootings, and shootings. Just some thoughts, says Steve. Thank you, Steve. God, I love emails like that. Meanwhile, Terrace says, allow me to answer your line of discussion. The religious right happened to West Virginia. The disease spread. In May 2018, the U.S. is terminally ill. And the religious right happened to Alabama, continues Terrace. And it happened, yeah, and you know what? The religious right happened to Virginia, and the religious right happened in Texas, and the religious right happened in Wisconsin and Minnesota and Michigan and Massachusetts. But they had not yet consolidated power. But now they largely have. And all they've got left is complaining that women are allowed to control the reproductive workings of their bodies, that people who love each other can get married. And that they can't force anybody to pray a particular prayer. And God, they're making $1 billion a year off of those things. I ran across something the other day. You remember Matt Staver, don't you? Matt Staver of Liberty Counsel, that tax-free religion industry legal dodge. The people who lawyered up for Sister Clerk Kim Davis, that rakes in tax-free dollars with both hands and their feet on the table. Well, Matt Staver, being a lawyer, watches the courts. And Matt Staver knows what the goal of the white wing is, the white wing religion industry is in this country. And he appeared on a radio program with a guy named Jim Schneider. And he offered up his view, his analysis of the current landscape, especially from a legal standpoint. I suggest you take Matt Staver at his word. I suggest that when he tells you what they plan to do, you treat it deadly in earnest, because you may rest assured that he is, and they are.
The nice thing about what President Trump has done, different than other Republican presidents, is that he is appointing, he's nominating, so far, judges who are what I would call constitutionalist, originalist, dedicated to the original understanding and interpretation of the Constitution and the statutes. On the other hand, Republican presidents in the past, they've been hit and miss. President Trump so far has been hitting this on the nail. Democratic presidents historically have appointed...
Hitting this on the nail? You mean hitting the nail on the... Oh, well, never mind. Don't pick nits there, Bob. But he's right. Donald Trump, through the kindly assistance of outfits like the Heritage Foundation, has been packing the courts with white-wing nut jobs. People who haven't tried cases. People who have conflicts of interest a mile wide. And all that business about them being constitutional originalists or constitutionalists. Anybody who abides, who seeks to abide by the Constitution is a constitutionalist. I'm a constitutionalist. You're a constitutionalist. But what he's talking about is people who are willing to try to pretend that the Constitution freezes the morals of the country in time. He's telling you, he's telling us, that he wants a world where people with darker skin are three-fifths of a human being. That's constitutionally original. It's constitutionally original for only property owners, owners of real property, to be able to vote. It's constitutionally original for voters not even to be able to choose the members of the United States Senate. I suspect he would like a constitutional originalism that did not include, and this will make the law, you know, the lawyers in the audience sweat, but doesn't include the effects of Marbury versus Madison. That's what he means. And by setting up that originalist scam, they move forward into the present, and they have stated goals.
Very liberal judges and very activist judges, Carter and Clinton and Bush, or I should say Obama, they appointed very, they were very adhering to a very radical judicial activist mentality, and that unfortunately has negatively influenced this particular system. And in fact,
and what he means by negatively influenced is that it has it has found rights to exist that did not for groups and people who did not have rights originally under the white man constitution, which is what it was. When the Constitution was ratified, it was a constitution for white property-owning men, period. Written by white property-owning men, for white property-owning men, by white property-owning men. And there's a history out there that if Matt Staver were honest, he would acknowledge, for instance, noting that Madison himself, before he died, was saying, "We have got to expand the franchise into the non-property owning class." And gosh, it would only take another 100 years or so before we got around to saying that the women folk could vote. African American men were voting in this country before women were allowed to vote. But you know that.
In fact, one of the cases we're going to be talking about, Jim, was an appointee right there in Wisconsin, going all the way back to President Jimmy Carter.
Yep,
and so you see the consequences of election and of these judges.
And, Matt, that all could change this November if the majority switches in the Senate.
You know, we, Jim, are one midterm election away, one midterm election away from eventually overturning the Roe versus Wade decision. And that's because there will be at least one, maybe two more vacancies at the United States Supreme Court that President Donald Trump will be able to fill in his first year. But in order to do that, his first term, in order to do that, he needs a Senate that will ultimately confirm. If he doesn't have a Senate that's going to be able to confirm his nomination, then he's going to be forced to nominate someone who will get through the Senate, which means somebody who's palatable to the judicial activist crowd in the Senate.
In other words, someone who isn't a wild-eyed white-wing ideologue. But please, I implore you, take him seriously. This isn't just some nut. I mean, he's a nut. But they have clearly defined and articulated goals, and it begins, more or less, with making sure that women cannot control the reproductive workings of their own bodies. But it also includes making sure that the Obergefell decision is overturned so that people who love each other can go back to not being able to get married if they happen to be of the same nominal gender. And Neil Gorsuch, Anne's boy Neil, is their guy for that. And there's another, Jesus Christ, there is another legion of lunatics out there for every seat that will come open. You want to talk about a miserable existence? I mean, I know we talk about the notorious RBG. And I'm sure that when Bill Clinton appointed her, she knew that she was in for the long haul and that she was going to have to stay there until her seat could be safely passed on to another person of her similar ideology. Or she died, whichever came first. But you want to talk about hell? Knowing that you're not free to not do your job, you're not free to just walk away and enjoy your golden years. Well, that's what it is for the four members of the court who aren't crazier than sprayed roaches. Kagan, Sotomayor, Ginsburg, Breyer. There was a raft of rumors lately. And it had the stench of wishful thinking about it. Oh, well, you know, Anthony Kennedy. Kennedy's the pelt that they want. Now, they would dance in the streets if Ruth Bader Ginsburg were to die tomorrow. The gleeful cackling would be audible on Mars. But it's Kennedy's pelt they want. Because Kennedy cannot always be relied on. Kennedy has sided in the past with a woman's right to control the workings of her reproductive system. Kennedy enjoys being in the spotlight, being the swing vote. And so a few days ago, it was all over a certain quadrant of the internet. Oh, Anthony Kennedy will probably step down, and Donald Trump will get to appoint his replacement. Now, Kennedy is, after all, a Republican. If you're a Republican with any conscience at all, which by where the Supreme Court's concerned, that pretty much means Kennedy and Kennedy alone. He can't retire. Because there's a list of, there's a list of reactionary, radical, white-wing jurists. As long as your leg, waiting to fill that seat, waiting to overturn Obergefell, waiting to overturn Roe v. Wade. And they'll do it. They will do it.
Literally, one justice more. 5-4 is the difference. One justice right now more, a Kennedy, a Sotomayor, a Kagan, a Breyer, any of those four justices, and most likely it could, you know, or a Ginsburg. Any of those justices, and it most likely could even be Kennedy. So you're talking about five judges, justices, and most likely Kennedy will announce his retirement soon. Any one of those appointed with someone like Gorsuch, and that means the abortion decision, the same-sex marriage decision, all of those things that went the wrong way will ultimately be in the balance to be reversed. So literally we are a few months away. I think let that sink into the people who are listening. We have to make sure that we vote values and maintain people in the Senate, as well as the House, but particularly in the Senate, that will ultimately vote values and vote the right way, so that when we do have a constitutionalist nominated for the Supreme Court of the United States, there will be enough votes to confirm him.
That's what's at stake. Plain and simple. That's not some liberal, progressive, wild-eyed lefty telling you. That's their side telling you right up front. It's what they plan to do. It's what they goddamn well will do. And yes, we are in this position because there were a lot of people, far too many out in this country, who on November the 8th, 2016, chose their own privilege over the common weal. It's that simple. And we dare not let it happen again. Why? Well, let's check in with a guy named Rodney Howard Brown. Now, this is the preacher. This is not Prayer Meeting Wednesday. But this is the preacher who laid hands on and prayed over Donald Trump in the Oval Office. He, too, has a vision for America. And if you treat his words as the ravings of a madman that could not possibly come true, you're not living in the same country I am.
Based on this book, there should be military tribunals taking place right now, and people should be arrested for high treason that's been committed at the highest levels of government, even all the way to the Supreme Court.
Well, isn't there going to be tribunals?
Well, you know, that would be the ultimate.
Well, you know? We do know that one of the Lord's prophets have already said, and he is standing by his word, that the Lord showed him there are going to be tribunals coming.
Well, personally, I think a firing squad would just be great. Just put them all in, stick them up against the wall and take them out. Somebody said to me the other day, how come is Hollywood so upset with the president? And I said, oh, well, let me tell you why. Because in Europe, the EU passed a law to fund the whole film industry of Europe and to support that. And they had put a law on the books in America that if Hillary had got in, the whole of Hollywood would be funded by the Fed, out of our supply, and the taxpayers would have to pay for that. And Trump nixed that the moment he got into office. That's why they hate him.
Plain enough. Clear enough. Thanks to our friends at Right Wing Watch for doing the hard, hard work of watching this madness and sharing it with us. Let those with ears to hear, let them hear, and those with eyes to see, let them see. This guy casually talked about firing squads and executing what he deems to be political undesirables as though he was talking about walking to the mailbox every morning. I don't know what this madness is. The EU has to fully fund the film industry. What? It's a little loopy. But this guy's been all the way into the Oval Office, has laid hands and prayed over the President of the United States. That means that Geezer Disgustus will listen. And knowing what a hankering Meta Mussolini has for the powers of a tyrant, if he were to hear that clip, you definitely put him up against the wall. Definitely against the wall. This is the world we deal with. Going back to the guns and schools issue, Silent R. Lamar says, I remember once upon a time that guns were for punks in a fight unless you were outnumbered. I suspect that has been a reality. Earther says, I went to elementary school for some years here in Florida during the mid-80s. We never had drills or talks about gunmen. What people were concerned with was abduction by strangers, stranger danger, and such fire drills and bullying. I'm not as old as you or Sparky. You're about 18 years older than me, and the idea of gunman drills and being shot at school was foreign to me. Certainly foreign to me. Jim says, two of the elements are unhappy, disaffected, and angry people who wish it all to end and take as many with them, situation permitting. Now, of course, with the news that came out over the weekend that Dimitrios Pagourtsis likely did what he did because he had been stood up or refused by a young girl who didn't want to date him. His parents are now claiming that he is as much a victim as the people he murdered because he was bullied. That was investigated. Some people said no. Was he bullied? Was it, and there are other words we can use in this context. He was on the football team, and football and athletic teams in high schools are notorious for hazing. And the hazing can be brutal. Things like Ben Gay in the jock strap. All kinds of quasi-homoerotic stuff going on, perpetrated by people who probably haven't figured out their own sexuality yet. And people who have and are more than happy to torture others as a result. Jack in Shreveport. Why shootings now? What's different now than what was going on pre-Reagan? One thing is the pervasive and continuous right-wing tactic of divide and conquer, perpetrated on the 99%, make ordinary people despise each other. And there's a lot of truth in what Jack says, and I know it inside myself. Because I catch myself asking myself when I'm talking to someone, a perfect stranger, gee, I wonder if that's a Trump voter. Because I now have, and I freely admit them, I'm not proud of them, I'm not saying they're right or wrong. Probably wrong. But I form opinions about people based on what they did to this country on November 8th, 2016. If it's wrong, it's wrong. And I should probably work on it. I was told in a Facebook discussion that I needed to stop participating in identity politics and political correctness. And that we need to understand that every problem we have in this country starts with class first. And all I can see when I and it is the further leftward fringes of our side that says this the most, that we got to talk about economic class first, is that there has to be some privilege involved in that to say that. Because we're going to talk about economic class first when a trans woman is beaten to death on a street in some American city. We're going to talk about class before we talk about race in the case of a 12-year-old boy who was gunned down by police who took less than 10 seconds before they started shooting when they saw him playing in a public park. Tamir Rice. We got to talk about class first in that. Anybody who says we have to talk about class first in this country is wanting in a basic understanding of how wound up what we call race and what we call gender is in the long abusive history of this nation. And the most powerful coalition we can ever build in this country will be a coalition that transcends boundaries and acknowledges the special circumstances that attend both the needs and the wants of any given group. I may yet again go off on my tirade about Amy Chua's book about political tribalism. God damn, I hate that word, tribalism. What a filthy little slur that is. But to continue, with regard to Kennedy, Steve in New York says, Kennedy committed the ultimate apostasies. He wrote the Lawrence decision that overturned Bowers versus Hardwick, and he wrote Obergefell, two of the central pillars of the rights of gay people in this country. Scott and Punky with a note. Wait a goddamn tongue-talking minute here, Bob. Rodney Howard Brown, isn't he South African or Australian? What the fuck is that? Is that fat bastard doing, chiming in on U.S. politics? Well, we kind of have to let him. I mean, after all, if we're going to let Jim Jeffries form cogent, hilarious arguments against gun ownership, well, we got to let Rodney Howard Brown play, too. I'm hoping Steve will tell me yes. Subject line, Steve's email. Don in West Tennistan says, anyway, I can get a copy of Steve's email. I'd like to give it a read over a few times so that it sinks in real good. Well, I'll copy and paste it into an email for you there, Don. I presume Steve will let me. Jim, meanwhile, with a note, says, these crazy people will burn books and people too. Yeah, they will. And the problem, Jim, is that they're not the minority that ever so many people in this country think they are. Because as we saw on November the 8th, 2016, there's a whole bunch of this country that doesn't care that they were voting alongside the Klan. They just wanted to stick it to all the people that they hate that Donald Trump promised he'd stick it to, whether it was Muslims or Mexicans or women or homosexuals or black people. They were more than happy to go along with the Klan and the neo-Nazis and the skinheads and march in, let's say, lockstep. Thanks, Steve. Copy and paste away. I will. Well, I've got work to do after the program. Marty wants a copy, too. I understand. That was brilliantly put, Steve. Silent R. Lamar says, what America needs is... no, Bob, this country needs equal rights to all, not some. And, you know, that's the long course of progress. What the Matt Stavers in the world are looking for is regression, not progression. Terrace says, but vaccines cause autism. Jill Stein voters were thrilled to hear that Donnie Dumbass asked Bill Gates whether to start a blue ribbon committee to investigate vaccines. Donnie Dumbass is out to get scientists who work for Big Pharma and hate Jesus. Yep. Perhaps you've heard by now about what happened at the EPA today. A meeting, a summit, if you will, on poison in water. Yeah. But only a select few media outlets were allowed in, while CNN and the Associated Press and E&E were kept out. No kidding. By the way, you know how I told you our dear friends in California in the Horn Family Community Congregation that they will come after you? Well, they're coming after you. There's a new head of the Environmental Protection Agency region overseeing California and some of the other western states. His name is Mike Stoker. He's a former lobbyist, you know, for Big Ag. And he's the federal watchdog for the EPA over California, where such a yeoman effort has been made to make the place livable. He's going to head EPA Region 9, Mike Stoker is. He gave an interview to E&E News after his appointment last Friday. He said the science on climate change is not conclusive. He said there's been a cooling trend over the past 2 years. Mike Stoker is the Republican who says that he came up with the lock her up chant. Well, you got a new fight on your hands, California. Good luck. I mean, I'm not being shitty. But the battle is coming to you, too. There are 700 EPA employees in EPA Region 9. They've got Arizona, Nevada, Guam, American Samoa, the Northern Marianas, and California. Speaking of Scott Pruitt, Mike Stoker said, I personally believe Pruitt is the best administrator I've seen with the EPA in my professional lifetime. The business and regulated communities got the short end of the stick. Pruitt is bringing back balance. Yeah. Among other things, once upon a time, he tried to slur a political opponent as a diehard environmentalist. Damn. And so today, over at the EPA, full-on totalitarian authoritarianism was on display. And it's creepy as hell. Wish I was kidding. Locking out the media from an ostensibly open meeting. Then there was the Department of Justice briefing today about the so-called FBI informant in the Trump campaign, which was not a spy. Say what you will about the FBI. Their job is Part of their job is to watch for spies from other nations inside this country. And they had reason to believe that the Trump campaign was up to its eyeballs in foreign actors. And presidential campaigns are supposed to be free of foreign influence. Not just money, but, you know, you get the idea. And so now, based on his, on Nectarine Nero's I hereby demand tweet the other day. By the way, for anybody who's wondering, that language came from some nasty gram that Michael Cohen wrote for him years ago. like the there was an Onion article once where the Onion said people feeling bad about this country can take solace in the fact that Donald Trump probably has no more than 15 years to live. They published that piece of satire long before he was president. And long before he was president, Michael Cohen sent a letter saying, I hereby demand that you remove this from your website or we will make you feel the hot, hateful wrath of the full force of the law. The Onion didn't take it down, and nothing happened. But Cohen was famous for writing, I hereby demand letters. Or maybe it was, I hereby demand. So that's where that phrase came from. So there was a DOJ briefing about the FBI informant at the White House. And the White House invited two senior House Republicans to the briefing on Thursday, in which it is possible that they're actually going to name names, the FBI is, to a bunch of political hacks and human sieves who will then go about doing their deadly damn best to undo an investigation into all of the filth that is the Trump regime. This is the meeting that was agreed to yesterday to be coordinated by the Chief of Staff, former Marine General, and racist John Kelly. Two Republicans will attend, no Democrats will be allowed at the meeting. The briefing. The reason given for that, according to Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags, well, no Democrats asked for details about the FBI's information. In other words, the Democrats behaved according to accepted standards of conduct. So since they didn't behave like asshats, they don't get to come to the party. Goldfish. But there's one more thing that does go with all of this. One of the things that Rod Rosenstein did, he's doing a little slow walking, or trying to. He referred Carotene Caligula's demand to the FBI Office of Inspector General to see if anything was done wrong. Now, this is the same AIG that Trump used to get rid of Andrew McCabe not long back. But there's another thing in here, and if Billable Rick's out there, or Steve, I know Steve's listening. Steve just sent an email saying, I confess I stopped talking to family members because of their vote on 11-8-2016. I told my dad that my uncle, his brother, whom I grew up with, went to Bengals games with, who came to my baseball games and who came to my hockey games, that because of that vote, he's dead to me. Bob, this election was not just about a vote of one or the other. We had a candidate and now a president whose official stance was to take health care from people, from you, from me. This is a person whose official stance was to take away my right to marry. This is an election unlike any other. The results are borne out with the division he has caused, the shithole comments, the epidemic of corruption. This is the man whose official stance has been to steal children from their parents and put the children in children's concentration camps to deter families from coming here. I do what you have done in judging people, Bob. I'm not ready to think I'm doing the right thing or that I have something to work on. Am I wrong for that? I don't know. Well, I'm not going to judge you, Steve. I'm just sick and tired of right-wingers thinking that they don't have experience, have to experience the consequences of their actions, and they're allowed to preach to me about personal responsibilities. But me, as a gay man, am by default dirty or immoral or some sort of animal. I'm sick of them seeing me as a sex-obsessed animal and my 18 years with my partner as something based solely on a desire for a phalanx of sexual dalliances rather than the committed, joyful, painful relationship that it is. So, yeah, I'm not ready to think I have something to work on. I think I need an apology from them first. Well, until such time as the threat that you feel, Steve, becomes real for them, you'll be waiting on that apology. And that's not a criticism from me, and that's not me saying you and I live in different places. And I can't help how I feel about people who voted for Donald Trump. Because they're the ones that have to live with from now on the fact that they said, yeah, the Klan is right in this case. Yep, I don't always agree with Nazis, but when I do, I vote for Donald Trump. That's it. That's just how it is. But anyway, the reason I mentioned Steve is that it occurred to me, and this might be a little bit complicated, so bear with me, please. It occurred to me that, well, I got to thinking about about Mueller's appointment. And he was appointed to investigate potential Russian interference in the 2016 election and in the Trump campaign. That's his brief. Now, Donnie Dipshit is complaining that the FBI put a spy in his campaign. There is not one iota of evidence to suggest that happened, but evidence, this is an evidence-free presidency. But remember, Mueller's brief is to investigate potential Russian interference foreign interference in the 2016 presidential campaign and whether there was foreign influence in the Trump campaign. So the complaint is that the FBI put a spy inside the Trump campaign to try to find those foreign influences. Now, I know Rosenstein sent the complaint itself off to the FBI Inspector General. But think about this for a minute. If Mueller chooses, doesn't this fall within his brief? Almost no questions asked? Isn't it essentially a complaint about the very thing that he's supposed to be investigating? And so is it not possible that this is a little, one of those little, what do they call them, Chinese thumb cuffs? And Trump has just put it on both thumbs? Is it not possible that Robert Mueller, investigating this, could say, hey, look, in making his demand, he was trying to interfere with the FBI election, FBI investigation, and therefore has committed what? Obstruction of justice. Maybe it doesn't make as much sense the way I say it as the way it feels inside, or the way it sounds inside my head. After all, you know, inside my head there's grunting and snorting and goldfish. But there's a possibility the stupid little bastard has fucked himself even worse with what he did. It, bless her heart. I thought poor Stephanie Ruhle was going to straight up have a conniption this morning over on MSNBC. They were having a roundtable discussion about everything Donald Trump doesn't know. But she used a particular phrase that I found interesting this morning.
And so let's talk about the president's maker. This could be his moment. He would never say that he deserved the Nobel Peace Prize, but many other people are saying it according to him. But when we look back on the president's record of making a deal, it seems like this administration has given up on making a deal between Israel and the Palestinians. There's a number of other examples that I have listed.
They walked away from TPP saying they were going to find a better deal. They said NAFTA stinks and I'm going to give you something better. They said China was a currency manipulator and they were going after this trade deficit.
Yeah.
So you're saying to me, I'm surprised. It's as though the president has never opened a history book. Well, I'm about to tell you, don't be surprised. He hasn't. Already this weekend, we had to watch Larry Kudlow.
Why have his advisors not sat him down and said, listen, there is a very good chance that they could be giving you a good face right now, but they're going to turn things around next month. Be prepared for it.
Because, Katie, they're on a death march. They're not saying, I'm going to have a rational conversation with the president. You're talking about people that can't even ask the president to read a report. He only will look at things that have his name in bold letters. They only get 10 minutes at a time with him.
Reports that president.
Yeah. They're on a death march. What a phrase. And it's true. It is undeniably true. They're on Even the business about I hereby demand, if you've got any experience in the White House at all, in politics, in governance, in civics, then that kind of shit has got to give you the dribbles. Jim's being a bit, surreal. No, it's not really surreal. Pointing toward the absurdism of the situation, me talking about Trump obstructing justice. How can one obstruct something that no longer exists? Well, if he doesn't get charged, then it may well be that that it doesn't exist. But one of the things that is becoming clearer and clearer and clearer in the course of all of this, and I don't know how often you go and read the impeachment clause in the Constitution, but I look at it every now and then. You know, we had to have, back in the 90s, we had to have a protracted discussion about whether or not consensual oral sex constituted a high crime or misdemeanor. Because that's the way Article 2, Section 4 reads, the President, Vice President, and all civil officers of the United States shall be removed from office on impeachment for and conviction of, and this is where we kind of leap over to to high crimes and misdemeanors. Because that's the catch-all phrase. But shall be removed from office on impeachment for and conviction of treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. Treason's a tall order. Maybe bribery is too, but the things that are happening in this administration, in this regime, as opposed to the protracted conversation we had to have about whether or not a blowjob was impeachable, well, it's right there. Bribery. And it's plain. And it's not just Russians. It's Russians and Chinese. It's Russians and Chinese and Qataris. It's Russians and Chinese and Qataris and Saudis. It's Russians and Chinese and Qataris and Saudis and the UAE. It's the $40 million that he used last year, or made last year, off of that tacky-ass hotel in the old post office building in D.C. But yeah, Jim says, I don't care what any investigation reveals about Trump, the House will not impeach, nor will the Senate convict. Sorry as hell. Unfortunately, that's probably a reflection of the current state of affairs. And I'm sick and tired, honestly, of the Parthian shots from these bold Republicans who are lionized in the for-profit media day in and day out. For instance, from The Hill, which published that god-awful screed from Mark Penn the other day. Mueller's investigation must be immediately stopped to save the country. Bullshit. Guy didn't, he was identified as a former aide to Bill Clinton, but what they didn't identify was that he is a present partial owner of a right-wing PR firm. But The Hill had a story today, or yesterday, rather. Republican senators who have warned the White House for months not to interfere with Special Counsel Robert Mueller's investigation are coming under new pressure given President Trump's latest demands for the Department of Justice. Republican senators believe that if Trump fired Mueller or obviously interfered in his investigation, it would backfire politically and potentially hurt their chances of keeping control of Congress. They want to avoid an all-out war between Trump and justice that might draw parallels to the Nixon era, Saturday Night Massacre, yada, 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 yada. I don't like seeing demands made, especially about political issues, said Senator Bob Corker Monday in reaction to Trump's demand that, what you like and don't like doesn't really matter, Bob, because you don't have the starch to put anything behind it. Because everything something comes along from the Trump administration, by God, you jump in line, you march lockstep, and you say, ah, you yell froggy, you yell how high when they holler froggy. Yes, you do, Bob Corker. Yes, you do. So, Senator John Cornyn, the number two Republican in the Senate, said Rosenstein had made the right call about his referral, but defended Trump at the same time for wanting to make sure Obama-era officials weren't taking improper actions against him. I thought the president's point was an important one. It is unthinkable that the leader of the opposing political party
would have the authority to use the FBI to place an informant, potentially, in a political campaign of his opponent's. And, you know, we need to know more about that. I think Rod Rosenstein made the right decision. God damn, there is not one shred of evidence that Barack Obama... But it doesn't matter, does it? He used his Kenyan Muslim usurper wizard powers. And then there's a famous Parthian shot master Jeff Flake. Rod Rosenstein did what he should have done. That's where it belongs. Cowards. Our country needs statesmen. And instead, we've got pants-wetting occasional sycophants. Yes, Mark Penn was involved with Hillary's campaign in 2008. Steve, you're absolutely right. Note from Terrace, subject line loud and clear. Bob, I know Repiglicans are coming for California and other Democratic states. Repiglicans voted for a sinning asshole because they hate us. They tout other reasons such as abortion to hide and mask their jealousy. Liberals have more sex. It drives them insane. The more we hate Dumpster, the more proud they are of their civic bowel movement. The objective of the Southern strategy was to make America stupid, defund public education, pour lies into young vulnerable minds that fear demons. Mission accomplished. And speaking of sex, I had a note earlier from Cheryl in regard to summa cum laude. Hashtag some come louder. Yes, spelled differently on purpose. Some come louder. Well played. Well played, Cheryl. So I've just about filibobstered 2 hours away. My sincere apologies. But and there's still more stuff. I had a note a few minutes ago from Charlene who said, "The news makes me miserable, but your snorts make me laugh. Here's a $50 challenge. If we can meet it, I'll add 25. That's huge, Charlene. Thank you. So if Charlene can get some company for her and Jack, then she'll match the next 50 bucks that come in. That doubles your money. Then Charlene's going to throw 25 bucks on top of it. And that would take us down to, oh my God, the ciphering. So that would take us down to only $225 to go to clear the deficit such as it is. Thank you. Thank you, Charlene. Please respond to these challenges when they're made. These are people who are more than happy to help keep this program on the air as long as they've got a little bit of cooperation and participation from the rest of the community. Thank you, Charlene. Scott and Punky with a note. I presume Punky has calmed down, although I did just snort a minute ago. Here's the deal that Trump and his mindless enablers simply do not get. Part of the job of the FBI includes investigation. Hell, it's in the name of the agency, for shit's sake. Same goes for infiltration and surveillance. When it comes to national security and public safety, that's what the FBI does. I know the righties don't believe it, but history will prove me correct. Think back to Mississippi, 1964, when Goodman, Cheney, and Schwerner were murdered because they were assisting black people to get registered to vote. LBJ ordered J. Edgar Hoover to get his ass in gear to solve the case. A big part of the solution of it centered on an FBI infiltration of the Klan. Then a few years later, in 1965-66, the FBI investigated and infiltrated Bob Jones, the other Bob Jones, who headed the rapidly growing North Carolina KKK, which helped bring him down. And for the record, committees in Congress also held hearings about the guy. Those interested will want to watch the American Experience episode Klansville, USA. It's on Amazon Prime, free to subscribers, and they can also find it free on YouTube. Thanks very kindly to Steve for jumping in support of Charlene's challenge. There's $40 to go remaining on that now. No, there's $30 to go. Thank you, Ralphs. Thank you so very much. That's true, Jim. Jim says, Bob the Czar had better ministers. Without a doubt. Barbecue Todd. I love that he calls himself Barbecue Todd. You know, he started out as Good Todd back when we had Cranky Todd. This spring is really silent, says Todd, thanks to Scott Pruitt and company. The closed press meeting is extremely troubling. We all know that organism is a fascist. When will Congress do their job? Oh, by the way, I sent Todd some barbecue picks, some rib picks. Those ribs look unbelievable. No fat. Are those the ribs with the pickling spice? Yes, those are the ribs with the pickling spice. And then this. This is almost like some sort of religious response. Looking at those ribs really makes me want potato salad. Yes, but not Karen's bland-ass potato salad with very little seasoning and perhaps only some salt, right? Yes. with the reminder from Scott and Punky, Steve got a little giggle. Am I the only one who has noticed that Bob Jones University's initials are BJU? No, but it's going to be stuck there forevermore. And that's a good thing. Yeah, the Jim says of the FBI, that was a long time ago. One of the things that's been pointed out along the way is the fact that the tactic demanding that the FBI investigate itself for investigating Trump's campaign and Russian infiltration, foreign infiltration of our electoral process, that is exactly the same tactic that Tayyip Erdogan, the dictator of Turkey, engaged in order to consolidate power. It's 2 minutes past the hour. We'll take a break. We've got the Green News Report on the way, and Thomas has been patiently waiting on the phone, and I just had to get all of this stuff out and attended to. So we'll take the break, and then we'll chat with Thomas a little bit, and hopefully we'll see Charlene's challenge met, and that will take it. And if that challenge is met, if there's another $30 out there, then we'll only have $225 more to go. And it would be great to see some new names for those who are able. It would be great to see some new names among those responding to the challenge. Thanks, y'all. Thanks very much. Let's see here. Probably got to find a... I got to admit, the as far as a bumper's concerned, or just an interlude, the cake story is one that it just grabbed me. I don't think there are any songs about guns and broilers. Don't like that. No. Let's see.
okay, this has potential. It's a little obscure, but I think it may work. Yeah, this is... No, I don't, no, not, no, we'll stay with the, yeah, okay. Sorry, that's just one of the conversations that goes on inside my own head with my debates. You don't want to live between, not in my head, no. So, a break, and then the Green News Report, and then some conversation radio. This is listener-supported conversation radio with $30 remaining on a challenge courtesy of Charlene. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Spring was never waiting for us dear. It ran one step ahead as we followed in the dance. Garden's heart is melting
It's Tuesday, May 22, 2018.
You said there are going to be massive, massive sea level rises. Don't you think if you're going to have that kind of statement, you ought to have some idea as to what all the causes of sea level rises have been?
Republicans waste public's time denying sea level rise in House Science Committee hearing. NASA study finds humans are driving major changes in the global freshwater supply. The British government to launch non-recyclable plastic tax. Plus,
Swamp Captain Mitch McConnell has created millions of jobs for China people.
He's back. Ex-con coal baron Don Blankenship launches third-party bid for U.S. Senate.
All of those cons and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Obama says when mine leaked into groundwater, it can cause intellectual impairment. But I drink mine water all the time, and I'm fine. And I drink mine water all the time, and I'm fine.
Go Don Blankenship. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Toyin, I listened to some of this audio from this House hearing. It is incredible the lengths that Republicans are going to deny climate change on behalf of the fossil fuel industry. It's amazing.
Yes, and Republicans on the House Science Committee, they were trying to explain away things like rising sea levels in a committee hearing last week in an attempt to deny the global scientific consensus that burning fossil fuels is causing dangerous global warming and rising sea levels. Republican Congressman Mo Brooks of Alabama was very sure that if sea levels really are rising, it could be because of rocks tumbling into the sea.
What about erosion? Every time you have that soil or rock, whatever it is that is deposited into the seas, that forces the sea levels to rise because now you've got less space in those oceans because the bottom is moving up.
Oh, Jesus.
Now, the purpose of that hearing was to focus on how technology could be deployed for adapting to climate change. But instead of examining potential policy actions, the leading climate scientist, Philip Duffy of the Woods Hole Research Center, had to spend the hearing instead explaining basic science to Republican House members.
Good God.
Meanwhile, former coal baron and ex-convict Don Blankenship, the so-called Dark Lord of Coal, who served a year in prison for mine safety violations that caused the deaths of 29 miners back in 2010, has now announced he is launching a third-party run for Senate in West Virginia after losing the Republican primary. Blankenship's bizarre primary campaign ads attacking Republican Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell garnered a lot of attention.
They blew up the coal mine and then put me in prison. Now they're running ads that say the coal mine blew up and I went to prison. There's no surprise there.
So now we may see more of those kooky Blankenship ads if Blankenship can find a way around West Virginia state law to proceed.
Yeah, if he's able to get on the ballot, it would not help the Republicans, that's for sure. It'll probably help Democratic incumbent Senator Joe Manchin, but it remains a big if. West Virginia has a sore loser law that'll probably keep Blankenship off the ballot.
Then again, Blankenship really hasn't cared that much for laws previously.
Well, that's true, but if he wants to run, he's going to have to follow him, sort of.
Meanwhile, NASA scientists tracking shifts in the global water supply via satellite measurements say that humans have dramatically altered the global water map, revealing major shifts in water supplies from California to China over the last two decades. They link about two-thirds of the changes in water availability to climate change and human activities, like excessive groundwater pumping in farming regions. Calling the data, quote, an eye-opener, they warn that the shifts in global water supply indicate potential areas for future water resource conflicts due to decreasing water availability, primarily in food-producing regions in the United States, in India, and the Middle East. But some good news, the British government is planning a major new tax on non-recyclable plastic packaging to fight the scourge of pervasive plastic pollution in the world's oceans.
Yeah, good news for you, tax and spend liberals.
Well, the UK Independent reports that the proposed new plastic tax would levy a tax on the use of non-recyclable plastic packaging, so it puts the burden of plastic waste onto the companies that create it. The UK plan is to make the cost of using non-recyclable plastics, quote, so exorbitant exorbitantly high that companies will shift to recyclable packaging instead. And Britain plans to use the revenue from the tax to expand its recycling facilities and create new jobs.
Sounds kind of like what a lot of folks have been trying to do, putting a price on carbon.
Exactly. Meanwhile, the city of San Francisco has committed to transitioning to an all-electric bus fleet.
Nice.
Planning to launch a small electric bus pilot program next year with the target of shifting to all-electric buses starting 7 years from now in 2025. That sounds great and very progressive, unless you know that the city of Shenzhen, China, has already switched all 16,000 of its buses to electric, and they did it in just 3 years.
Well, that's because they made China great again. For much more on all of these reports and the ones we didn't have time for, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
MacArthur Park tickled Jim and said, God, does that bring back memories? Reverbo the human boy is one of those people who's not afraid to sort of reach out and wander around the spidery recesses of my mind. And got a note from Reverbo saying, and Richard Harris, one of the legendary British Hellraisers, along with Burton O'Toole and Oliver Reed, did a famous version of that cult classic, MacArthur Park, and you don't know how close I was to playing that. But then I figured that if I played the Donna Summer version, somewhere off in the great unknown, the late, great Peter Godbold would probably be dancing. So I opted for that. I'm very happy to announce that thanks to Kitty in Boston, who says, in memory of Mr. Whiskers, $10 toward Charlene's challenge. That means we got $20 to go to meet that challenge, and that means that would make for a total of 125 off the 350. So 350. And that would leave 225 to go on the evening. Thank you. Thank you, Kitty. Hopefully you'll get a couple more friends at $10 a piece, and then we'll start on the other 225 so that we're not facing a horror at the end, by the time Friday on the front porch comes around. Thank you, Kitty. Thank you very, very much indeed. By the way, I had a little tweet take off today. And, it's not like millions and billions or anything, but, or even thousands. I just want to thank you because I've been meaning to say this, and this just reminded me. I want to thank you on Facebook and Twitter when you retweet my stuff and when you like it and you ship it along and give it a little bit of legs. I really, really do appreciate that because that's another way of helping to grow the program and helping to grow the community. Because that's always been the goal, not to own a Gulfstream 5. That's all a joke. But to grow the community, to expand the conversation, perhaps at some point to be able to buy a new phone system, have 6 lines lit up on hold, and have more people participating so that there will be less people out there in the nation who feel like they are alone. Because one of the things that I'm proudest of that we've done here with the Horn over the last 14, 15 years is we have succeeded in breaking through the sense of isolation that the right wing created when it established almost complete and total domination of audio media such as this. So thank you. Thank you for what you do to help expand things that way. And I try to pay attention and I try to like when people do that sort of thing. And just, please know that I notice it and you have my thanks.
You have our thanks.
Our thanks, because the lovely Agnes is right behind me.
We're family.
Yes, we are. I got a
kiss.
We
love you guys.
I got a kiss.
Okay, let's... Well, darn it. I was going to Thomas, and now Thomas isn't there. But it's 19 minutes past the hour on this Titanic Tuesday, and we've got more Titanic stuff to talk about. Thomas, if you want to, I hate that you were on hold like that, and then you bailed out. Thomas said, you're on a good rant, Bob. I'll let you keep going. Well, I mean, that's okay, but the conversation is also the heart of the program, or at least I view it that way. And I'm proud of the fact that we've got some of the best long-form conversation to be found anywhere here. Intelligent, perceptive, esoteric. And I need to... I need to let you know, because so many of you have learned so much about what goes on here in terms of the public health crisis that's been occasioned by mountaintop removal. I would really appreciate it, and I think you will be glad you did. It's like 20 minutes tops, but there's a TED Med talk. You know what TED Talks are. There's a TED Med talk that has finally been released. I mean, it happened over a year ago. But it features a brilliant scientist named Michael Hendricks. If you go to TEDMED, TEDMED, if you go to TEDMED.com and you search for Michael, standard spelling, M-I-C-H-A-E-L, Hendricks, H-E-N-D-R-Y-X. You know, if you're sitting in front of a browser, hell, do it now. Listen to it later, or watch it later. You're going to learn in a nutshell just how profound the science is that points to the public health disaster that's unfolding in Appalachia. It's public now. Take it. Then please feel free to share it on social media. Put it on your Facebook feed, please. Put it on your Twitter feed, please. Get it out there, because this is the science, the review of which was quashed, squashed, silenced by the Trump regime last year. It's largely indisputable, which is why it had to be suppressed, because we are now a country that suppresses, not just denies, suppresses active science. TEDMED.com. And I can read you the whole link, but everybody's going to get lost on it. TEDMED.com, and then in the search box, just put in Michael Hendricks, H-E-N-D-R-Y-X. Michael Hendricks. I am very proud to call Mike a friend, and I have been honored to be able to work to try to expose more people to the scientific work that he has done. And one of the things that we're finding out is that there is a transferability about his work. It isn't just something that happens in Appalachia. It's something that happens wherever there is blasting on a massive scale. Jim, I'll be right to you. I promise. Stand by. Yesterday, there was an environmental disaster in Whitehall, Wisconsin, in the frac sand mining sacrifice zone.
One of the ironies is that there is no frack gas to be had in Wisconsin. Whatsoever. But in what is called the Sand Hills, and I've said before, there is a painting that hangs on the wall of the fabulous Horn Studio of the Sand Hills of Wisconsin. And I am forever in debt to Jenny for gifting that to us. Sometimes I just stand and look at it, which is what you're supposed to do with paintings. And there's actually a photograph out there of Jenny with her easel up, and that canvas on the easel, and the real Sand Hills in the distance as she painted them. And the Sand Hills of Wisconsin are the Sand Hills of Wisconsin because they are made of a particularly fine-grained sandstone, which crushes into a form of sand that is supposedly the be-all and end-all of the sand you want to use when you just have to frack somebody's substrata and ruin all their water. So there's a frack sand processing plant in Whitehall, Wisconsin, not far from the Tremplo River. Let's see, I've mentioned mountaintop removal, I've mentioned sandstone, I've mentioned a river. You probably already know where this is going. Some of you have read my little essay about it on Facebook. There was a disaster yesterday. The disaster began when one of the dozer operators at the frack sand plant did something or had something happen in which he and his dozer collapsed into what is referred to as an impoundment, but which, if we weren't using such Orwellian language, we would call what it is a toxic waste pit. The man was at risk of dying. Probably because some regulation or some rule or some best engineering practice had been shorted or gotten around or ignored or evaded or avoided. And so a man was about to drown in a pit of poison. Because you can't frack sand mine without creating poison. Frack sand mining uses extensive blasting, just like the sort of blasting damage to human health that Michael Hendricks talks about in his TED Talk. So the brief news account that I read stated that every emergency response vehicle from the entire area converged upon the scene. And that as the man... the worker was in extremis, the decision was made to release all the liquid poison in the pit of liquid poison. So they breached the impoundment and they let it all flow out downstream. And they turned the Tremplo River a sickening shade of toxic orange. And in the name of saving that one man, rescuing that one man, toxic waste from a frack sand processing plant was sent downstream and into the lives and into the bodies of countless innocents. And so now, there, downstream, down the Tremplo River, there's another one of these 30-year experiments now underway into what
effects toxic waste from a frack sand processing plant will have on human bodies. The worker was rescued. He was later described as resting at home and that he was fine. If the man was exposed and subjected to the toxic waste in the pit, he may think he was okay for the moment and be grateful to be alive, but I doubt that he's anything near fine. And he is also one of those people who is now an involuntary participant in a multi-year study on the health effects of toxic waste on human body organ systems. There are real-world consequences to the deregulation. Remember the guy in California who said that we're getting some balance back in the regulatory system? Well, that balance ran down the Trempealeau River yesterday, and as far as I know, that river may still be orange. The poisons are leaching into the soil and leaching into human bodies because some corporation somewhere decided that there was a fortune to be made in blowing the living hell out of some beautiful countryside in Wisconsin and grinding the sand into a toxic dust whose particles are so fine that people nearby cannot help but breathe them in, and when they breathe them in, they turn into little engines of death. And the shareholders get a quarterly profit. Yay, capitalism. Yay. So let's go over and check in with Jim. Hey, Jim.
Well, after all of tonight, I mean, what can I do to entertain your audience? Tell them I'm going to commit suicide right here on radio?
No, let's don't do that.
Huh?
Yeah, let's not do that. Yeah.
No. I mean, everything I said from the start of this program through the last comment that you read, you know, it's basically a compendium of how I feel and how I see things. And I just don't see things that are very good right now. And as far as my view of justice being surreal is concerned, Bob, I think it's totally realistic.
Well, I was thinking absurd. Yeah, I withdrew the surreal description. It's more like absurdism.
Well, it is, number one, it is a tragedy of the first magnitude that we have no justice in this country. And if that man can get away with what he's done, then that proves to me, without a doubt, that justice does not exist. And without justice, what do you have?
Well, I believe was it Langston Hughes who wrote in another context, justice delayed is justice denied?
I think he did. That man wrote an incredible amount of things throughout his life. And I've always been a devotee of a lot of his studies and what he said. He led a very interesting life, and he traveled all over. He traveled well, and he knew what he was talking about, particularly when he realized where he came from and where he ended up. As far as your comments about this Dozier operation, are you talking about, where did that happen? I think I had a short of something here.
Whitehall, Wisconsin, on the Trempealeau River.
Okay. Well, and they're doing a study up there, right?
No.
I thought that you said that some type of study would be done.
No.
No, they're just blowing the hell out of the sand hills, that's all. It's over in the west central part of Wisconsin. It's one of the border counties.
I don't know. I thought to myself when I heard reference to a study, why the hell would this EPA be doing a study about anything?
No. The National Academy of Sciences review of the mountaintop removal science was quashed by the Trump administration.
Well, yeah, they will do that. And if they control, you know, here's the thing. These people have money, and they have money, money, money. And when you have money, 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 you've got power, power, power. And they have the ability to remake or reshape, transmogrify anything they wish. It doesn't make any difference what the truth is. You're not going to get it. Because they're not truthful people. They are liars. They are deceitful individuals who have done some very bad things. And you know,
The area in Wisconsin in question sits about halfway between La Crosse and Eau Claire.
I've been to La Crosse a lot of times. That's a beautiful town.
And they have actual, no kidding, hills there, and they have been,
yeah,
they've been blasted away.
And for what purpose?
To obtain sand that is used to inject into fracking wells in order to create the release of the deep pockets of natural gas in conjunction with a proprietary blend of toxic waste and chemicals and water.
God only knows what that's going to produce as far as the water table is concerned. I can't approach that anymore. I did hear that Don Blankenship has risen from the grave again. What the hell do you think that idiot is trying to do?
Oh, he's trying to monkey wrench the system. No, I'm not kidding. Now
in the elevator in the Capitol building, and I rode in the elevator with that man, and I looked at him, and his eyes were absolutely, completely dead.
Yes.
He looked like something from a horror movie. A perambulating cadaver. And that's exactly what he is. And he's talking about he doesn't drink that water? Uh-huh, sure. Right. Come on, I've got a big old bridge up in New York I want to sell somebody to. But can he legally get away with that, or is it like a
Well, first, football? No, it's not at all clear that he can't. I mean, there are some things that kind of have to happen or might have to happen, but he's got the pockets to fight it out through the court system, and probably get his way.
Here again, money, power, money, power. And no justice, just his selfish desire to screw things up and to keep his name in the press and to make this state look even worse than how it looks currently.
Yeah, well, see, there's something at work here called a sore loser or sour grapes law.
I've heard of that.
And on its face, it says that if you lose the primary, you cannot then disavow your party and run as an independent, a sore loser in November. And that makes sense.
It does.
But it also applies, but it's a state law that applies to state races. Senate is obviously a federal election for a federal office.
Well, there you go. That could be a...
And there's an argument to be had. And look, I don't like third parties. I know that's going to make me a neoliberal establishment shill, man. But in the system which we have, Jim, third parties serve only one purpose, and that is to harm
the mainstream party with which they are most closely allied. Now, now, in the case of Don Blankenship, he intends to run on the ticket of the Constitution Party. Well, the Constitution Party is a weird little core group of hard cases and dead enders who think that the Freedom Caucus and the teabaggers and the Trumpansies, the Republicans generally, are a bunch of sissy liberals and not conservative at all.
Oh, yeah, the Republicans aren't good enough for them.
Right.
Or bad enough, whichever you want to call it.
So if the conventional wisdom is to be applied to them, you would say that they will damage the Republican Party. You know, which is just fine by Don Blankenship, because he's decided he doesn't like Patrick Morrissey, who is the nominee. But there's another problem here. And while I don't like third parties, because of what they, because of the monkey wrenching that they do to a first past the post political system, which ours is, I also have to acknowledge that they have constitutional rights. And they have a constitutional right to pretty much nominate who they please. For instance, if you consider the state of New York, there's a good, a relatively good progressive third party up there called the Working Families Party. I think we've even got a manifestation of it here in West Virginia. And sometimes the Working Families Party runs its own candidates on the ballot. Sometimes, however, it simply endorses the Democratic Party candidate, or it could endorse the Republican candidate as it sees fit. That is its right. Well, if you say that Don Blankenship can't run in November as a member of the Constitution Party, you are effectively muzzling the political rights of the Constitution Party. Did I say Mountain Party? I didn't mean to. It's Constitution Party. Mm-hmm. And you can't. And you are curtailing the Constitution Party's freedom of association under the First Amendment.
And that's a legal precedent.
Well, I don't know that it's a precedent, but it's damn sure a viable argument.
Well.
But the thing is, what I've said in regard to this is that, if Blankenship gets away with this, and I expect him to, then it's going to be then the November Senate election is going to be a full-on circus, complete with a clown car and lots of clowns coming out of a tiny car, and unicycle acts and high wire, you know, everything that a circus is. Because then what the other half of my prediction, because I predicted this would happen. The other half of my prediction is that the candidate who ran as the primary opponent to Joe Manchin will then run in November as the Mountain Party's nominee. After Don Blankenship has paid all the money and done all the heavy lifting to make that legal to happen.
Here again, the money. That's it?
Sure.
That's the deciding factor.
But just to finish up the idea here, Jim, what would happen then is you would have a third party drawing votes away from Patrick Morrissey, and you would have a third party drawing votes away from Joe Manchin.
Well.
Which might then actually create enough of a mess to give us Senator Blankenship.
Well, maybe that's what his intentions are. You know, money can buy a lot of political strategy, and considering these times, it's hard to say what's going to happen. But I do know this. I have no use for these third parties, because I saw what they did back in 2016, and I saw...
And what they did in 2000.
Yeah, and what they did in 2000, exactly. I mean, you know.
Now, to be fair, in 1992, they gave us Bill Clinton.
Well, that was a lucky break, I guess. But I can tell you this. In 2000, I remember all these people talking about, what's his face? I can't even remember the guy.
Ralph Nader.
Ralph Nader, yes, good Lord. Unsafe at any speed. Well, that's
no,
exactly
he did great work on the consumer front, but you know, he should probably have chiseled into his headstone when he goes to his long home, there's not a dime's bit of difference between Al Gore and George W. Bush. Because no matter how much good he did in his life, that is his legacy.
Yeah, I used to refer to him with people who supported him back in 2000, unsafe at any speed. And they really got pissed off. They said, well, just because I don't agree with you, I said, can't you see who is going to benefit from this?
And then, and I know the entire litany that comes after it. Choosing the lesser of two evils is still too evil. It's still evil, man.
It's bullshit, man. I mean, you know, I heard all
this. I've
got
to vote my conscience, dude.
I mean, these are adults. They are not something in a fraternity rat fuck, which is the way they approach some of these elections and support people like that Jill Stein. And you know, I can understand why people did not like Hillary. Hillary was just the wrong candidate, but she was the candidate, and she was the only alternative we had to what we have now. Now, if you want to take what we could have had as opposed to what we do have now and take a caliper or vernier caliper and measure it, tell me what you get. And I don't give a shit if you use metrics, English, or whatever. It's a big, big figure.
It is that. And look, you know, I hurt a lot of feelings in 2016, and I'm sorry about that.
You hurt mine.
But
you hurt mine a damn bit. As a matter of fact, I thought to myself, he's trying to tell those assholes what they need to do and what they're going to end up having.
But Hillary is corrupt, dude.
Huh. You know, that kind of stuff is so immature. If you can't look at the possible outcomes, you sometimes have to hold your nose in order to get not what you ideally have, but what is something that is infinitely better. Now we've got a man up there, and we can't get rid of him. And like I said earlier in my email, the House is not going to impeach, and even if they did, the Senate will not remove him. I mean, it would take an absolutely, these people talk about this blue wave and all this other bullshit, it ain't gonna happen. And I hate to tell you, it's just not gonna happen. Now, you can go ahead and live in these sandcastles of fantasy, but all they are, when the election comes down, they will evaporate into nothing, and you're gonna get the very burst. You're going to get what you really asked for. I'm really angry with some of these people and then not having the sense. And they all have good sense. But all, but this purity of what? Pure what? Pure bullshit. And you look at Jill Stein. That woman's nuts.
Well, and she's still at it. I just got a note from Mike in Cascadia, a picture of one of her tweets. Here are some recent Trump wins enabled by Senate Democrats while they distracted people with Russiagate. She's still defending Russia. Made a torturer head of CIA, $80 billion military spending increase, expanded surveillance powers, deregulated big banks, killed debate on U.S. support for Saudis.
Okay, well.
Hashtag the assistance.
Well, I mean, look at this Republican tax plan that was passed. Now, that's a real humdinger.
Yeah, and it didn't need
the debt on that thing is more than the defense budget.
Right, and see, none of those things would be a problem right now on the 22nd day of May 2018 if it weren't for people like Jill Stein. Because we wouldn't have a Donald Trump sitting in the White House to sign the goddamn legislation, Jim.
There you go. There you go. And that's where it really counts. And that's it. And, you know, people can have their theories. That's fine. But you better watch out what you do, because when you get involved with all this kinds of stuff, it's really. A snake is going to enter your so-called garden of whatever you have there. And you know what happens when you mess with the snake's ass? He's going to bite you. And that's exactly what has happened here. They tried to reach for something that was the unreachable, and look what they got. I won't make any friends on this program. I don't have any.
I don't think you're pissing anybody off.
No, I'm just looking at things realistically, and you know, it's worse than anybody can imagine. I mean, the things that he has planned, and he's getting away with it. And his son, I mean, this is a disciple. Okay, that building at 666 Park Avenue
just got bailed out by the Qataris, didn't it?
Well, they said no, and then Saudi Arabia had something to say, and then they got bailed out $500 million from Qatar. So if that happens, I don't know if it has or not. I thought it was still in the works. It probably will work. And as long as stuff like that works, then that man, his son-in-law, will be able to get away with even more shit.
And I mean,
he will have the weight of that financial success on his side and on his father-in-law's side as well. And they will say, well, look what we did. We just pulled a victory from the jaws of defeat.
There we go.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to take up.
No. You're doing fine. You just got an email from Steve in New York saying, preach, Jim.
Still, Steve, I said thank you.
You just did.
And if you could please have that email of his sent me a copy of it if you have a chance.
It just went to you.
Well, I'm very glad, and I'm glad your barbecue turned out so well for the weekend. It just sounds absolutely scrumptious.
Oh, I think I'd even be a hit down at Fair Oaks.
You know, if this thing if it gets any worse, you may as well just give it up and have a good cooking show. You'd probably make a hell of a lot more money. You really could.
Well, yeah, but then you got.
I'm not saying negative.
No, I've still got this little fantasy of doing the program while like a Friday on the front porch out behind the smoker and the grill, and the gas powered griddle and everything. You know, it's just a matter of a few video lights and a few wires and we got the cameras and the video hooses and this stuff. We could do that.
But then there's got to be a budget for
the food you cook, and then there's got to be a budget for the finished process, because on a cooking show you have to cook everything twice.
Yeah, I know. But you know, even as it is, Sal, the conversations you have with people. are a departure from the usual bad stuff. And there's a little bit of light, and I certainly enjoy your barbecue conversations. I've learned a lot from them as far as the use of spices are concerned. And they do provide a little ray of sunshine into an extremely darkening world.
And yeah, I mean, if I could sing, I'd sing. But we've all heard me try that, and that just about killed the program.
That's okay. You can sing all you want to. I don't give a shit. I don't care.
Well, went from preach Jim to shut the fuck up, Jim. I'm afraid. I'm gonna start getting those. No, Jim, don't make him. Don't tell him he can sing. God
Well, you're going to sing whether you think. You're going to sing anyway, Bob. I know you. You're going to do what you want to do, and that's going to be the do. And there's no point in arguing with you about stuff like that, because if you get a hanker to do it, it's going to come forth. That's just your nature.
Well, I mean, I'm really sold on this idea of in-show snorting. That looks like the next big thing.
Well, you could try farting. You could get that CD, Pull My Finger. I'm sure that would get some attention. I'm sure that would wake some people up. I don't know if you wear that CD, but
oh,
it's out there.
I know.
I have a copy of it.
I know. By the way, in the spirit of Blazing Saddles, you got a harumph from Terrace. I didn't get a harumph from that guy. Harumph! Yeah, that's right. Watch your ass. Yeah.
Tell me my feel. Harumph back.
Harumph!
And, you know, oh boy.
Now, I don't know. I like this. I think I like the snort better than the harumph, but I'm funny that way.
Well, I think anything that you can use to punctuate a litany of not so good information, but it's reality stuff. Whether you want to believe it or not, it's there. And whether you want to accept its presence, it's going to be knocking at your back door in some way or another. It sure as hell will.
You can't hide from it. By the way, there will be...
You know, and it's hurting most of the country. 98% of the country. I mean, they're being hurt by it.
And you know, there's an inquiry that goes with that, Jim, that is tragic in its nature. And that is the sneaking suspicion that many of us feel that, you know, those poor, wait a minute, economically anxious rural American white folks who decided that voting with the Klan just this once would be okay. There's a sense that, you know, that they're not going to care until it touches them. But the problem that comes after that is the question of, will they learn then, or will the availability of Fox and all the right wing hate radio and all the podcasts simply, well, no, you know, that's that Kenyan Muslim,
that's
you slurp or wizardry, and you know, they're just trying to, you know, your world has fallen apart because the Trump economy's gone to shit. You know, because we had one of those as a president one time, and there's only so much he could do. By the way, I have to say there will be no snorting through the remainder of the program, because Alma just finished off Charlene's challenge, saying, I paid not to snort. So,
well, bless her heart. All I can say is, and I've got patches right here in my lap. She's kind of glad too, because every time I snorted just for her, she just perks up. She didn't like it too much.
The hell is that? Wait a minute. I thought this was going to be an okay place.
Yeah, I'll tell you. She turned out to be a real fine living thing.
Well, we had a cat moment yesterday, and she wasn't. It wasn't out of animus or anything, but. Mushu, the Siamese cat, has this thing where she likes to sit up on top of the armoire in our bedroom. And she decided to jump down, but she jumped wrong, and instead she sort of fell in cat-wise fashion, which means rotating her, you know, four paws downward, with all claws extended.
They get hurt like that.
And landed on me. I've got a nice about 4-inch claw slash down the back of my left arm, and another one down my left leg.
God, how many of those do I have? I got. Now I know what you're talking about.
And it was like, son of a. And then I realized she's. She has the innocence, you know, and this is in kind of cats generally. She has the same kind of innocence that, like, a pit viper does. You know, they're who they are.
Well, yeah.
They're deadly, you know, they're deadly by evolutionary process.
They are extremely independent in spirit, and they're highly intelligent. They're much more intelligent than a dog. And if you say, come here, they're going to say, well, you, or if it's in their best interest, they will come there where you want to go. Now, there's some cats that are a lot more, the longer you have them, let me put it this way, their senses become a lot more malleable as they grow older. I mean, that was the thing about Rufus. Rufus was just like a dog. I mean, he was highly intelligent and loving and will never be replaced. Now, this kitty is, I'm glad I could give her a home. That's what I've tried to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, really, to tell you the truth, Bob, I didn't want to do it because I just don't want to have to go through what I went through last month. It, like I said before, it almost killed me. And I almost got used to the being here by myself until this came along. And I said, well, if something happens to me, and I made the arrangement with another friend, if something happens to me, this cat's got to have a home. And they've agreed to it. So, there we talk about enough of cats and stuff like that. But this has been, it hasn't been a very pleasant program to listen to. But, I mean, you know, I think people need to really stop and really think about what is happening here. And not to just say, oh, well, in November it's going to be fine. Things go work out. They don't work out like that anymore. You got to have the money and the power, and we don't have it.
And you got to have the drive, and you also, Jim, have to have a dogged determination that,
oh, exactly,
that you're going to put aside all of your yearnings for the perfect and put up with nothing more than the good.
Well, that's, you know, that's the way I've always tried. I've always been very pragmatic. You know, you have to be pragmatic. And if you go around trying to think and your head's stuck in the clouds, your toes are going to end up being filled full of shit. That's exactly what's going to happen to you. You got to look down, be realistic, hold your nose if necessary, and, you know, when I'm caught between the lesser of two evils, well, what do I do? Take the one I never tried? You got to think about it. And, you know, I just picture time is running out. I mean, this country is not what it used to be. In the past 20 years, in the past 30 years, I'll say, it has remarkably and horribly changed. And it's not the America that people want to think still exists. There are a lot of people who stick their heads in the sand and think, oh, it's going to be fine. You know, it'll work out. That's all right. It's going to happen. Oh, yeah. It'll happen all right. Like it happened in lots of other places in the world in past history. And I'm not going to make reference to any specific one. We all know history, and we've all talked about
it. Well, and the other side of it, on this little tail end of the program, little ray of sunshine conversation, is let's assume for a minute that we can get the Congress back. Okay, let's just assume that. Well, then it becomes a holding rear guard trench warfare action until 2020.
Bob, let me ask you something real quick.
Yeah.
What do you know? What is the median age of our Congress? Could you just, could we guess? I just wonder what the median age is of these people.
I don't know. I bet that's out there though. It probably ain't in the 30s.
It might be enough to reflect a lot of changes that have gone into the education that these people have received before they finally jacklegged their way into Congress.
The average age, and this is might be old, but here's a link that says the average age of a senator is 60, the oldest ever, and the average age of a member of the House is 55. The oldest in more than a century.
Oh, well, 55, that's got it right there. They're old enough to have been in the earlier stage of their growth and development and the education to which they were exposed to have been infected with a lot of bad stuff. And a lot of the curriculum of the schools in which they attended has been so attenuated by the lack of the teaching of history, social studies, and civics and things of that nature, they wouldn't know what the hell you were talking about.
Well, I'm one of those. I'm 55, and I got a reasonably decent high school education.
Well, see, you were lucky. You went to a fantastic place. You really did. I went to Foot Life magazine, and you had all, you know, all those people from all over the country and the world who were drawn there by federal jobs. And
yeah, more and more I realized that it was atypical. But what I was going to point out is, you know, the nature of a median is that there are as many older as there are younger. And the ones who are younger than that 55, and I mean no disrespect to people of that age group in the Horn Family Community Congregation, but the advent of the Reagan administration is the beginning of a serious dumbing down of the educational system.
A diminution of those things to which I just referred, you know, those disciplines.
We had our fun with it earlier this evening, Jim, but consider that really the summa cum laude cake, really?
Yeah.
And whoever installed that dirty word filter probably never had a goddamn minute's worth of Latin, okay?
I was thinking the same thing. I mean,
and the way something like that should work is that it should make an alert go off for the cake baker to look at the message, not just automatically wipe out a word.
Right.
And then the cake baker can go to the assistant manager or the bakery manager and say, "What's this?" And they go, "Oh, that's Latin stuff. It's okay, Marveline. Go ahead and write it on the cake."
Yeah. I remember last week you used the term "robbery dictu." I have not heard that, and I haven't heard that. You're the first person I've heard use that expression.
Well, I am proud of the fact, Jim, that on any given program, a word will be probably used in this broadcast by either me or a member of the community that has not been used in radio anywhere else in the United States of America that day.
And you know the thing about it is, if I did not know what that word meant, I would have written it down and looked it up. Or at least I would have gone to the tablet and pulled it up on, the internet. I mean, I'm just curious that way. Sometimes I will listen to programs, and sometimes yours, and I'll just write stuff down with a pen. And then I'll, you know, if I haven't understood the way you use it, then I'm going to look it up and see what the hell it means. Because I, too, am very, very fond of words.
You are a practitioner of the art of word knowing.
Well, listen, let me let you go. You've got lots of things to do, and I'm glad you did what you did. But I think tonight's program was not a very pleasant listening experience, it was definitely one of necessity.
But we found a few laughs along the way. It's not every day you get a story about a broiled 45 caliber semi-automatic or anything like that. They just don't come along, and you have to celebrate them when you do.
You know, to tell you the truth, I think I was doing something. Can you tell me quickly what happened there? Somebody tried to cook a pistol.
A guy in Ohio wanted to make sure his house was safe for his kids or his grandkids or whatever. 44-year-old fella, so he decided to hide his Freedom Protector in the broiler of his oven. Only he didn't tell his girlfriend, who then heated up the broiler.
Was it loaded?
Oh, fuck yes.
Oh, dear God.
And dude got grievously injured, but he's going to be okay.
Well, I hope he learned his lesson. I mean...
Yeah, I'm sure he did, I'm sure he learned his lesson. Don't hide guns in the broiler. Put them in the toaster.
Oh, boy. I've done some stupid things in my life. I've done some dangerous things in my life. But I don't think I could ever top that. That'd be like putting something like, one of those Bronson jet
broiled
in the microwave.
Broiled pistol under glass, sir. It is redolent of the lovely flavors of cosmoline.
Did it blow up his oven?
Well, I reckon so. I mean, you know,
know how it is. The oven is above, and then the little broiler area is below.
I tell you, I would laugh at that. I'm glad you retold that, because I missed it, really. My mind was on something else, and that is really... That one needs to go in the Guinness Book of World Records.
And I didn't even get to the guy in England who was busted after a 5-day drug binge with a bathtub full of potatoes because his room in Eastleigh in the United Kingdom was redolent of the aroma of cannabis. But what really tipped the hotel staff off is when they saw him walk into his room with a bucket of potatoes wearing a bra on the outside of his shirt.
Well, that's got to be quite a remarkable sight. Did he have a bucket? He had a bucket of potatoes with him?
Yeah, and then the bathtub was full of potatoes, too.
What was he doing for that? He tried to make alcohol?
All I can think is that he was going to do going for bathtub vodka, but Beth in Dallas posted that last night, and my wife and I sat and I read that story to her, and we were cackling so hard I thought one of us was going to have to go fetch eggs. I mean, because oh my God!
You got room for one more quick story?
Well, let me just tell you that the denouement, one of the more, it happened in the UK, so there was actually a happy ending. The guy wasn't sent to prison for a billion years like we do in the United States. He was sentenced to community service and told to go and damned well get into a drug treatment program and get clean. But, that's the Hunter S. Thompson Award. You know, that's, I didn't tell the poor bastard about the potatoes. He'd find out soon enough. And guys, if you're going to go on a 5-day drug binge and fill your bathtub in your hotel room with potatoes and smoke a bunch of dope,
there you go.
Wear the bra under your shirt.
Indeed.
Haley responded on Facebook last night, "Stop telling us how to wear our bras, Bob."
Oh God, well there you go.
You know, and however, that's one of those for Haley. You know, right? Yeah.
Indeed. When I was a kid, I first learning about the art of distillation and what happens when you put fruit and stuff like that in a jar, and how you can make alcohol and stuff like that, or homebrew, I think is what it was called. I didn't know what the hell I was doing. I think I was in like the seventh or eighth grade, and so I had this big, remember those jars that are about a foot tall or 10 inches tall that you put pickles in?
Oh, hell yes.
I put them all in there, and then put them back in a cabinet next to the stove.
Oh, I bet that got nice
and just
toasty.
Forgot about it.
Boom!
And about 3 o'clock in the morning, it went off. And you talk about a mess.
Ooh,
good Lord. And guess who had to clean all that up?
Oh, I imagine it started. James, would you step in here for a moment, please, son?
No, it was get your ass in here. What have you done? And I said, well, I was just trying to experiment. I just forgot it. And my father just said, my God, if your ass wasn't attached to you, you'd forget that too. He said, for God's sake, clean this stuff up and I'll help you do it, because I'm the one who told you about that shit. No more. Take care.
Yeah, you have a good evening, Jim.
I'm going to try it. Bye-bye.
Later. The irrepressible Jim, not far from here. And we do have some good conversations sometime. We do. So it's time to knock things down here. I got a couple of emails to share before we're out the door. Brendan, going back to the musical interlude earlier, said, MacArthur Park does bring back memories, but can you tell me what the fuck that song is about, please? My money is it's an acid trip. Because otherwise, I mean, I've never contemplated the lyrics to MacArthur Park under the influence of acid, but I got to think it would help. Cakes melting in the rain, never have the recipe again. Good God. And MacArthur Park is, it's melting too. I wish I could help, Brendan, but, you know. At P.S., Brendan says, Richard Harris was Irish, not British. That's true. But they are considered the great hellraisers of British cinema. So, yeah, I think you can both be right. Meanwhile, note came in from Brian. I just came from my voting poll and was the only Democratic Party voter, but I stood proud as I signed my ballot requesting a Democratic Party ballot and others behind me saying, hey, you got the wrong one. I said, I chose wisely. And I walked over to the voting machine and cast my vote proudly. Good on you, Brian. Good on you. I chose wisely. Back reference to the end of Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, I believe. He chose poorly. That was not a snort, Alma. Okay, as long as we're clear. That was not a snort. That was a grunt or something. But okay. Jack in Shreveport noting on the way out the door. A toaster is a perfect storage place for extra clips. Yes, it is. Especially in Warren County, Ohio. So thanks, everybody. Thank you. Thank you to everyone who answered Charlene's challenge. Thank you so much. That means we'll finish the evening at a $225 deficit. Thank you to Jack and Shreveport for getting us started. Thank you to Ralphs and Steve. Thank you very kindly to, again, to Charlene for making the challenge. Alma for finishing it off. Thank you to Kitty in Boston. And make sure I didn't miss anybody. Steve and, yes, Jack. So tomorrow the fundraising goal will be $425, and hopefully we'll make that and have a tailwind as we head for fundraising free radio at the end of May. Thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air. Thanks to all of you who share in your precious finite time to keep the program going in terms of the conversation. Many of you have been here since the very beginning, and I thank you, and I recognize what an honor you do to the community you've helped create in staying involved in it. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks this evening to Sparky. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thanks, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. Don't forget to go to tedmed.com and look for Michael Hendricks, H-E-N-D-R-Y-X. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.